We'll be discussing about the system of Daivavarnashram and how the Daivavarnashram, how it is a unique blend of the Bhagavat Marg, the Pancharatrik Marg, and the Vaidika Marg. So, a little background to understand this. Then, we start in the spiritual realm, see, because everything starts there. So in the spiritual realm, you have a spiritual culture that is going on. And that culture is based on pure love for Krishna. So Krishna is, how do you say it? Krishna's devotees, they have great affection for him. And because of this affection, this natural affection, then they are serving Krishna. And in the spiritual realm, then one learns from the other devotees how to serve Krishna in the best way, how to please Krishna. So it'll be according to one's natural relationship, one's rasa with Krishna. So that means, depending upon one's particular interest to serve Krishna, that rasa, then one will learn from Krishna how to serve him. This seem to be losing many people. They don't speak the language, or... So, this is very important to understand that the whole culture, all the activities that we are expected to perform, they have their basis in the spiritual realm, in the spiritual world. This is very important, is that if we want to actually understand devotional culture, then that can only be understood if there is an understanding of the spiritual, where its origin, or the spiritual realm. So now, if somebody has a relationship with Krishna in one of the rasas, then there are certain ways that that manifests in its best way. Right? There's certain activities, like the cowherd boys. Cowherd boys, they want to serve Krishna as friends. So there's certain activities that friends do that increases the relationship. It increases the rasa. Right? Means that the cowherd boys play with Krishna, joke with Krishna, wrestle with Krishna, chase him around, or make so many boasting statements, you know, that if I defeat you, then you have to carry me on your shoulders. It adds to the relationship. It adds to the rasa. Right? But if the cowherd boys come up to Krishna and say, "My dear Lord and Master, you please direct me how I can best serve you." Right? This will not add to the relationship. Right? This will not give any flavor to between Krishna and his devotees. But now if the servant of Krishna comes up to Krishna and says, you know, "Well, let's wrestle," then that doesn't add to the relationship of servitorship. Right? Just like a mother Yashoda, she always likes to feed Krishna, take care of Krishna. If she decides she's going to wrestle with Krishna, that is not good for the parental rasa. Right? So the rasa is the source of activity. The Lord, He is omnipotent, omnipresent, the one Lord, source of everything, complete in all His, in everything. So He is there as Atmarama, with all His energies, everything within Him. And He is satisfied, He is happy. But we see to increase that happiness, he expands his energies. And then what does he do with those energies? Then they exchange relation. They exchange, there's exchange between them based on their particular attraction or love for Krishna, their rati, their attachment for Krishna. You understand? So Krishna has expanded activities to increase his pleasure. So that means the purpose of activities is to give pleasure to Krishna. There's no other purpose to activities. Hare Krishna. There's no other activity, no other purpose. So now, with this we see that the activities, if they're done in a particular way, then they're appreciated by Krishna. And if they're not done in a proper way, then that is called rasabhas. Right? It is against rasa. So in the spiritual realm, the basis is pure love. And that exchange is based on that pure love. So whatever best brings out that pure love, then that is rasa. And whatever is against that is rasabhas. Okay? So now this is the origin of culture. So now in the spiritual realm, in Vrindavan, then that culture is based on pure attachment, pure unalloyed love. Right? Spontaneous love. So this spontaneous love is the symptom of Raja. Now when we go to Dwarka, then we see that the five rasas are there, but then there is now the aspect of rules and regulations becomes manifest. The rules and regulations becomes put into this. Then, when we come down to Vaikuntha, then we see, or down to Ayodhya, we also see the five rasas, but now we see the conjugal ras becomes very much restricted. Parental ras is more restricted. Friendship ras, there are some. Servitorship starts to become prominent. Right? But it's not completely. But when we get to Vaikuntha, then God, he doesn't have any parents. Right? And he only has his consort, Lakshmi. Or Sri Bhu and Nila. That's it. Right? Friendship is not, we don't find it there. Servitorship is there. So there's the Lord and his devotees. And even Lakshmi serves basically in that kind of mood of reverence. There's more reverence in her dealing. It's conjugal, but the reverence is there. So as we see that it comes down like this, but its source is all Vrindavan. Because Krishna is his original surup, his original form, is that what he manifests in Braja Vrindavan. Now, this comes across into the material world. Right? Now we brought it down to the Vaikuntha. And then we see from expanding from this Maha Narayan or from the Maha Vaikuntha, then we have the Purusha avatars. We have the Karanodakshay Vishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Kirodakshay Vishnu. So they are all in the They are also within the material realm. So now within this, in the spiritual realm, we have the aspect of, we don't have the aspect of the Lord is the creator. The Lord is a maintainer, the Lord is destroyer. Just, he is God, or he is a king, or he is a cowherd boy. So there's importance of this being established, the aspect of the Lord being the controller, the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. That is what makes a difference. That's why in the Panchatattva, Nityananda Prabhu, he's expanding all of the Vishnu Murtis. So just having him there is enough. But we see it's a special manifestation where Krishna takes the mood, not just I am God, but I am also the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So this is then Mahavishnu. So then Advaitacharya is then a predominant, is one of the main personalities of the Panchatattva. Right? So what's happening here is then as we're getting close to this, then at one point it reflects. Right? Krishna says in the Gita that the material life is reflected on the material, on desire. We have desire that we want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the controller. Right? So then that the spiritual realm is reflected onto that. So that means the culture of the spiritual realm, that is what is reflected here in the material world. Because when the living entity rebels against Krishna, he's not rebelling against the culture, right? He likes the culture, right? Because in the culture, then everyone's worshipping, everyone's respectful, everyone's doing service, right? But the problem the living entity thinks is, why is Krishna the one who's receiving that? Why not myself? Right? So there's no problem with the culture. The problem is, who is the center of that culture? Therefore, that spiritual culture reflects into the material world. And then we try to be the lord of that culture, the enjoyer of that culture. So we see that basically the same principles that apply in the spiritual realm, how Mother Yashoda should behave, how the friends behave, how the gopis, how the servants, how the cows, everyone, that is reflected here. So also in the material world, the friends aren't going up and offering prayers, and the mother's not saying, hey, let's wrestle, and all these different things. Those maintain, because it's a reflection, right? When you have a reflection, you see that the same thing is there, is in the main body, right? If you have a tree in its shadow, you can tell where the trunk is, where the leaves are, you know, where the root is. So that aspect is, it's very important to understand this, because then we can connect. Knowledge becomes useful when it's connected to Krishna. When it's not connected to Krishna, it's not so useful. Therefore, seeing this connection, how the material culture is just a reflection of the spiritual culture. Therefore, it's said that there is an original tree, means this material world is like an upside down banyan tree in the Gita. And it says there's an original tree. It doesn't get into detail of that, right? So that original tree is the one where Radha and Krishna are sitting under, right? Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumara, right? That Kalpadruma is the original tree. Then that's reflected here, but upside down. Why? What's upside down? We are trying to be the enjoyers rather than Krishna. So now, with this, now we can start to understand the difference, what's going on here. What is the rules and regulations? In the spiritual realm, it's spontaneous, based on love. But in the material world, we do not have spontaneous love for Krishna. Right? We have come here not because we love Krishna. We come here because we love ourselves. So now, the whole idea is how to turn that around so that we develop our love for Krishna. So we don't know how to love Krishna. We have an interest in the material world. So therefore, we restrict those activities that are going to entangle us in the material world, and we encourage those activities which are going to turn our attention to Krishna. Right? Jnana and Vairag, detachment from the material world and knowledge about Krishna in the spiritual world. Right? So now, these rules come to us basically in three forms. The Bhagavat, the Pancharatrik, and the Vedic. It is very important to understand the principle that by restriction, you create exchange. Right? This is very important. This is probably one of the most misunderstood elements of the modern culture, the Western culture, is they don't understand this. There's restriction, there is interaction between people. The greater the restriction, the greater the interaction. The less the restriction, the less the interaction. The greater the restriction, the greater the emotional exchange. The less the restriction, the less the emotional exchange. Right? It appears not to make sense, right? The modern culture is be free, do what you want to do. But then look at the modern world. How are the interactions? Hundreds of wars going on all over the planet. You know, three out of four divorces. Marriages end in divorce. Children walking out on the family. Families, the nuclear family, basically doesn't exist anymore. Right? From the joint family, we've gone to the nuclear family, right, of the 50s and 60s. But now, is it actually a tight nuclear? Nuclear means it's tight. Is it tight? No. So we're getting to the, you know, subatomic particle family. You know? Like that. Every particle for themselves. Why? Because there's no restriction. Right? Why do we break? Yeah. So now, let us look at this. If I have someone, and there's a relationship, if there's no restriction, how is the relationship going to be understood? Right? You have husband and wife. Husband's off with any lady he sees, wife's off with any man she sees. That's freedom. Right? We can be broad-minded and all that. But what is the depth of relationship between that husband and wife? Not so much. But if there's restriction that this man stays with this woman, bus, then the interaction is greater. The affection, the trust, the love is greater. Right? Friendship. The friendship, somebody comes over and wants you to do something with them, but you'd rather do your own thing. Then how will that friendship develop? But no, because the friend is asked, you do. That restriction then creates that exchange. Right? So nowadays, people are not willing to be restricted. Therefore, the quality of emotional exchange and interdependence and affection has actually become very, very minimal. Very superficial. Right? Does this make some sense? Therefore, the regulations are there. That's why in the spiritual realm, based on affection, then there is, one avoids rasa bas, because it doesn't add to the relationship. So in the material world, therefore then one follows the restrictions that are given to us, because it increases our affection between ourselves and the Lord, ourselves and the devotees, right? Our understanding, our relationship with the material nature. All that is enhanced by the rules. So how do these rules come to us? Right? So the very esoteric ones come through the Bhagavat. Chanting Hare Krishna, this is the Lord, He is non-different from His name. You hear spiritual topics, in other words, hearing, chanting, remembering about the Lord. Right? In other words, one should always remember Krishna, never forget. Right? This is the essential rule. So then the Bhagavat Marg is essentially always trying to remember Krishna by chanting His names, hearing about Him, and remembering Him. Right? So now, this works very nice for someone who's very advanced. Basically, someone who is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. They can work purely according to this platform. But now, Krishna says in the Gita, so the best thing if you want to get back to Godhead is just surrender to Him. Just surrender. But He says if you can't do that, then you follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. Right? You follow sadhana bhakti. So the sadhana bhakti then, we get the rules come to us through the process of the pancharatra. Right? Rupa Goswami gives us what are the principles. And Sanatana Goswami gives us all the different rules and regulations. Right? What are the restrictions? And we find that, yeah, another point on these restrictions, because sometimes Krishna says in the Gita, the regulated principles of freedom. By following this regulation, then we become free. We don't follow, we don't become free. So this is our point. Do we want to be free in the spiritual realm? Or do we want to be free and leave the material world? Or do we want to be free in the material world to move happily through 8,400,000 species and not go to the spiritual realm? Basically, that's our choice. Freedom is there. It's just where you want it. Right? So therefore, you have to follow whichever you want. You have to follow the restrictions of that realm. So, then the Pancharatra, that gives us how to follow the rules and regulations very, very nicely, so that we stay away from sinful activities. Right? The tendency of the living entity in the material world is to perform sinful activities. Right? Sense gratification. That is the interest of the living entity here. So the Pancharatra sees that we don't do this. So the Pancharatra means we get up in the morning, we offer our obeisances to the spiritual master, then we, you know, tidy up our bed, we use the toilet, we clean ourselves, brush our teeth, clean our tongue, take our bath, then we dress, we put tilak, we take care of our hair, we have neck beads, right? We chant our do Achman, we chant our Gayatri, we see Mangalartik, we clean the temple, right? We associate with devotees, we take prasadam, we distribute prasadam, we take care of guests, we read the scriptures, then we worship the deity, we worship Tulsi, and we take care of the dham. That is Pancharatra. Right? So we see purely brahminical activities, but brahminical, not material brahminical, but brahminical meaning we understand the goal is Krishna. So Prabhupada explains that the Brahman, there are three levels. First level is one who is dvija. They are qualified to perform worship, or let's say not qualified, they have the they are authorized to perform deity worship. Then the second level is one who has knowledge about this. He can follow it. He has knowledge of what is deity worship, what are the scriptures. He is learned. So when he's learned and practicing, he's called Vipra. But still, one may just be absorbed in rules and regulations and in the scriptures. The philosophy. But one doesn't know the purpose. So when one knows the purpose, that the purpose behind it is knowing Krishna, serving Krishna, being a devotee of Krishna, then one becomes a devotee. Right? Then one is Vaishnava. So this is the system. That is the Brahman. Maharaj, you want to sit here? Sit. So, so the whole idea of the whole culture is to get us, all the rules and regulations are to get us to the point where we understand what they're for, to become a devotee. That is the point of them. So, this is the perfection. So the first main set of rules and regulations that deal with our conditioned nature, that is the Pancharatra. And it is brahminical culture. And brahminical activities. Right? And at this point, then if one needs, one can introduce the ashramas, the brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, because that's also part of the brahminical culture. Now Krishna says if this is not able to fully take care of our conditioned needs, we are not fully satisfied with this, we're doing service but there's still more material needs, more material desire facility, then, he says, then work for me. Right? So that's the next platform. So that introduces the Vedic system now. That's the Varnashram, the full Varnashram system. Right? It's not just a Brahminical culture, but you add in the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. So now, then you're adding in passion and ignorance. So then the occupational duties are there. One gets more facility, right? Brahminical, one's not getting great facility. One is depending upon the Lord very much. And then these other aspects, then one takes advantage of these other facilities. One gets more, right? Kshatriyas have more, Vaishyas have more, you know, Shudras have more freedom, right? So, for someone who needs, then they take advantage of that. So that is the Vedic system. But, because we're getting very much into what's the material facility, then a lot of emphasis in the Vedic system is put on what is pious and what is impious. What is good and what is bad, but materially good and bad. You know, you do this activity, it's pious, you get credit. You do that activity, it's sinful, then you lose credit, you will suffer. Then people will follow nicely, right? If I say do this, it's a very nice thing to do. You don't take it seriously. Obviously, if you don't do it, you'll go to hell for 7 lifetimes, and okay, I'll do it. No problem. Right? So that's the Vedic system. So the Vedic system is the bottom of the line of human life. The best is the Bhagavat, one who is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. This is real human, where all of one's activities is fully engaged in the Lord's service. Can't do that, then the rules and regulations of deity worship given in the Pancharatra, or the Brahminical, the pure Brahminical culture, the Vaishnav Brahminical culture. You can't follow that, you need more material, consideration is there. Then we take in the material side of the Brahminical, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Right? So is this clear? So this, all these restrictions then, the whole idea is to gradually elevate one. Right? The Shudra by time gets elevated to the Vaishya, by time to the Kshatriya, by time to the Brahman, then with time to the realized Brahman or the devotee. So this is what Krishna calls in the Gita the long path. Right? The slow path. As you go through Krishna's whole system, the Varnashram, the Pancharatra, the Bhagavat, then you get back to Godhead. So he calls this the slow system. But now Krishna is recommending to Arjuna, because Arjuna is already at the beginning of the Gita in the first chapter, has already quoted Vedic culture, which is like the bottom rung of human life. Below Vedic culture, there isn't human life. It's called Antyaja. It means those who live in the forest, or at least those who belong in the forest. Right? Like, you know, it's like a very popular term, cement jungle, right? You know? There is one movie about jungle to jungle, that there was the father who worked on Wall Street in New York, and his son somehow or another ended up living in the Amazonian jungle, right? So then somehow or another the father went there, got the kid, brought him back to the city jungle. But they're both jungles, right? Just one looks a little more sophisticated than the other, that's all. So the point is we're not, the Vedic culture is the bottom rung of actual human culture. Like that. So now, Krishna in the Gita, Arjuna's then quoted this. He said that, well, if we have this war, then the kings will all be killed, the dynasties will be finished, the women will become not protected, then the whole thing will be ruined. So he was very worried about this. And Krishna is saying, you're a fool. Right? So then right off the bat, Krishna is telling him that you're quoting Varnashram, but you're a fool. Right? Arjuna thought he was being very, very thoughtful and intelligent by quoting the Vedic culture, that this is the proper way for human beings to behave. But Krishna said, no, you're a fool. So now here comes the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita, the mystery of the devotional process, and the mystery of the whole Daivavarnashram. This is a very crucial point, is that the Vedic culture, not being done for Krishna, keeps one in the material world. Right? If Krishna is not the goal, one stays in the material world. If you follow the rules and regulations of Pancharatra, and you are not doing it for Krishna, then this is what Rupa Goswami calls Niyamagraha. Right? You're following the rules and regulations, but you don't know why. You don't know what's the purpose or the goal. Just rules have to be followed. Right? It's pious. It's a better situation than those who reject the rules because they don't know why. Right? Someone who follows the Vedic culture without understanding why is better than the person who rejects Vedic culture because they don't understand why. Because the rules of the Vedic culture are given by Krishna. So at least you're following Krishna's rules, though you don't think of him. Right? So at least there's some law and order. There's some social sanity. But the point is that the Daivavarnashram means that one is following these systems with the purpose of remembering Krishna. So now this takes on a very interesting flavor. Because all the rules and regulations that are there, right, in the Vedic system, are for someone who wants to be in the material world. All the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system, they compass those who are very happy to be in the material world, either in the modes of passion, ignorance, goodness, or passion, up to those who are interested to get out of this material world and go to the spiritual world. Right? And within the spiritual world, as we mentioned before, then there is Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, and then Braja Vrindavan. So that is the span of all the Vedic culture, the rules and regulations of this Vedic culture. They're that broad. Right? So there's something for everybody. Now, it becomes daiva because, first of all, anything that is just for keeping oneself in the material world and dealing in the material world, that is, first of all, rejected. So that leaves just those things that take one to the spiritual realm, whichever the realm, whichever the place you want to go, whether it's Vaikuntha or Vrindavan or Ayodhya, all that's daiva. Right? Because Krishna is the center. In other words, God-centered Varnashram. When it's not God-centered, it's just staying in the material world, then that's just called Varnashram, or Asuric Varnashram. And when the center is to go back to Godhead, that's called Daiva Varnashram. Right? So this becomes the split. Now, the Acharyas then, they tell us, they pick from this huge body of the Vedic culture, right? Nana shastra vichara naika nipano sad dharma samstapako. Sad dharma means that dharma which will establish us on the transcendental platform. Samstapako, they establish that. Right? So this is what our acharyas do. They go through the scriptures, they have picked out what is in the Varnashram that is of use. And for us, specifically, what is of use to go back to Vrindavan. Right? So then, we follow those things. Because so many things, everything reflects into the material world. Like Krishna's having rasa dance, it reflects here. Right? People like to have big parties and dance with everybody. But that part of the reflection we don't take. Right? Also in Vrindavan we see Radharani worships the sun god and all these different things are going on. That reflects here, but we don't take that. Right? Someone who wants to get good health, stay in the material world, they worship the sun god. Someone who wants to get out of here worships Krishna. So we see so many rules are left by the acharyas because they keep one in the material world. And then so many rules are accepted because those help us get out of the material world. Right? We have to become detached from the material world and become attached to Krishna. So now here comes the, this is very important to understand. Because that means that the rules and regulations that our acharyas have given us, that Prabhupada mentions in his purports, and we see in the Bhagavatam, and we see in the Bhagavad Gita, these we must follow. If we want to claim to be human form of life, if we want to be claimed to be very serious about going back to Godhead, we have to follow them. We can only not follow them if we are purely on the platform of Bhagavat as a Paramahamsa. Or say, at least Hamsa. Okay, let us be broad-minded. You have to be minimum on the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. When you understand, realized you're not this body, like Sukadev Goswami, like that, and you just wander around and don't care, eat, not eat, take bath, don't take bath, people spit on you or they don't, you couldn't care less, right? Because it's all Brahman anyway, right? What does it matter? If I take bath in the river or someone spits on me, it's all Brahman. You know? Air is Brahman, you know, rice is Brahman, it's all Brahman, so it doesn't matter. So if we're on that platform, then we don't have to worry about the rules. As we see, Sukadev didn't bother. Right? But if we are not on that platform, we have to follow these rules, because they're for the conditioned nature. And they're given to us by the acharyas. As we discussed before, that restriction then creates the attached relationship between us and Krishna and the devotees. We're not willing to follow Krishna's rules, right? Dharma comes from the Lord. Right? It's coming from God. God establishes dharma. Dharma tu sakshat bhagavat panitam. Means the Lord establishes dharma. So dharma and varnashram are synonymous. Then when we say sad-dharma, that means those activities that take us to the spiritual realm, those who are transcendental activities. So now comes in another aspect that we need to understand, is that what is spiritual? Right? Because we see the activity we are doing. We are doing an activity. It's our material body. Right? It's being performed with the material energy. We are moving around some material energy. Right? Our mind is material. Our intelligence is material. The ego is material. Right? And Krishna mentions everything's being pushed around by the modes of nature. We only desire. We desire to do something, the modes of nature make it happen. So then how is it spiritual? Right? Krishna points out, and Prabhupada points out in the Gita, that the devotee is going to the market, and the karmi is going to the market. The karmi is cooking, the devotee is cooking. The karmi is eating, the devotee is eating. So what's the difference? The difference is because the devotee does it for Krishna. So when he does it for Krishna, he becomes empowered by the chit potency, the internal potency. Instead of it being under the control of Mahamaya, it's under the control of Yogamaya. Right? Just like what's the difference between an electric cable that's connected to the power supply or that's not connected? The cable is exactly the same in both cases. Right? There's no difference. It will still have plastic on the outside and some copper on the inside and a plug at one end. Right? But when you plug it in, then it carries that current. So when we plug into the spiritual activities, the spiritual nature is there in those activities. So this is the secrets of the Daiva Varnashram system, or the devotional process. Right? So now, then another aspect that Krishna explains is that one's activities that one performs. Now there's a few ways you can look at it. One is you're performing the activity to get a fruit, to get a result. That is called the karmi. I do the activity, I get the result. Right? I do a good activity, I get a good result. I do a bad activity, I get a bad result. So, but the purpose that we, the reason we act is for that result. Right? I want the result. So now, Krishna is saying, do your activity without desiring the result. Because we understand Krishna is the doer. We desire, Krishna fulfills that desire. Right? Through the modes of nature. So actually Krishna is the one who sanctions it. The material modes are actually what's doing everything. We're desiring, Krishna's sanctioning. But because we desire it, we get the reaction. We don't desire it, there is no reaction. Right? There is no reaction. So the living entity who performs his activities without desiring the fruit, that is called sannyas. Right? Krishna points out in the 18th chapter that tyag means I do an activity, I get the result, but I give that up. Right? I give it away. I give it to Krishna, I give it in charity. That's called tyag, or renunciation. Right? But I worked for the fruit. I got the fruit, but I gave it away. But sannyas means I give up that work that creates the fruit. Right? So I give up. So now, here comes also a very, very fine point. Is this has two levels. One is we see in the external tradition means we give up those things that create material, the material benefits that everybody's jumping around after, right? Facility, money, position, you know, power, all these things. So then sannyas means giving up those activities. I don't do business, right? I don't look for a position. I don't try to control everything, right? That is the position. Because that's what everybody in the material world, they want the facility, so they expect sannyas means that must be given up. Then they'll accept this is sannyas, right? But now Krishna points out that the finer understanding of that is I perform my activity, my prescribed duty, means the duty is according to my varna and ashram, but I do so without desiring the fruit that comes from that. Right? So therefore, no material fruit is created. It's done for Krishna, so what result comes is spiritual. So Krishna points out this is the real sannyas. Therefore, no matter what varna or what ashram one is in, if one performs those activities, his prescribed duties, for Krishna without desiring the result, he understands the result is Krishna's before it's happened, that is sannyas. Therefore, no matter what ashram or varna one's in, if one acts in this mentality, one is sannyas. So therefore, Arjuna on the battlefield, shooting arrows, sitting on his chariot, with nice helmet and all kinds of ornaments and all that, he was the perfect sannyasi. Right? So this part is we can't just see. This is actual consciousness. So just saying is not enough. One has to do. Right? So this is Daiva Varnashram. Is that Daiva Varnashram here has these subtleties. That one is performing the activity of Varna and Ashram according to one's nature. But he is doing it simply to please Krishna. Right? It's Krishna's rules and regulations. I'm a human being. I have to act. So I must do it for Krishna. According to the Varna and Ashram, I follow those Vedic rules. According to the devotional principles of Pancharatra, and that given by Rupa Goswami, I follow those rules. And the thrust is to always remember Krishna, never forget, always chant the holy name, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Right? Then one establishes oneself properly in Daiva Varnashram. So Daiva Varnashram is not the externals. Right? You can have Varnashram and it have nothing to do with Krishna. Right? You have millions of examples of that in India. millions. There's guaranteed there's more pious people in India following Vedic rules and regulations that have nothing to do with Krishna than the whole first world combined. One has to remember there's 900 million people in this place. Right? 900 million. There's not that many million in the first world. Not even this. If you add in the second world, then you may come up to that. So we must remember there's more people on this planet, you know, who are in a culture position than those who claim to be in a culture position and claim to be the leaders of the world. Right? So this is very important. Varnashram is not something dead and gone 5,000 years ago, or even 500 years ago. It's being practiced today by millions and millions of people, to different degrees. But much of the time we see it's just the ordinary Varnashram. And there are plenty of people who are following Daiva Varnashram. So we must remember, it's not dead. Not only that, that's just what we see here. 5 billion people we see on this planet. We are one of so many mandalas on the Bhu Mandala. And the whole rest of the Bhu Mandala, if we read in the fifth canto, each of the different islands, they're all humans, and they're all worshipping the Lord, and they're all offering their prayers. So all those humans on this planet, they're all following Varnashram. Right? The demigods, they're naturally following Varnashram. And the ones above that, Maharjana, Tapa, Satya, they're following Varnashram. And even we go down to the lower planets where the demons, we see Bali Maharaj, he's doing sacrifices and he's the king and he has his Rajguru and he gives in charity to Brahmins and all that. They're also following. So there's a handful of human beings on this particular remote corner of the universe, on this part of the planet, right? What we see, right? Just what we see, that have a tendency to follow, or nowadays the modern thing is not follow. So we have to put things into perspective, that we are not the center of the universe, we're not the biggest thing happening around. You know, there's a lot more happening all over the universe, and even all over the planet there's a lot happening. So with that in mind, then we can see that this Daiva Varnashram is very special. It's meant to be followed. Right? So it's something that can be followed. What Prabhupada has given us in his books, that he has gained from the acharyas, that is very followable by all of us. That is why Prabhupada is the Acharya. Right? Founder Acharya means he knows what the followers can do, what they cannot do. Right? And he establishes accordingly. Then we end up with the Varnashram that Prabhupada talks about. Right? So this means that the Vedic, the rules and regulations of deity worship, the Pancharatrik, and the chanting of the holy name. If that's all taken together very nicely with the purpose of going back to Godhead, going to Vrindavan, this is Daiva Varnashram. Okay. Are there any questions on this? We'll take some questions and then tomorrow we'll get into some more detail. Yes, Mataji. The Vipra and the Dvija. Okay, the Mataji was not quite clear on the difference between the Vipra and the Dvija. The Dvija means one is twice born. The first birth is considered animal birth. Because any mother can tell you that the small child, when they're born, they're only interested in eating and sleeping and making a mess, right? Right? Completely self-centered, right? They're just, you know, two-legged animals. Then, with training, then they take on human characteristics, right? They go from animal into humanoid. And then from there, gradually, they come up with training. So the first birth is the animal birth, in which the body, the senses, you know, the emotional platform, as one grows, the emotional platform is cultivated, the intellectual platform is developed, and the identity, right? We're from a particular family, dynasty, community, nation, you know, like that. So that's the first birth. So second birth means when we're born into understanding that that there's a higher platform. There's the spiritual platform. Right? So that is the second birth. One is actually learns that there is the spiritual realm and I am actually a resident of there. So that is the second birth. We are born into spiritual activity, spiritual life. So that means we are born into that through the process of initiation. Then, now we have the right to perform the spiritual activities of deity worship. Right? But it doesn't mean we know what we're doing. Right? So one has to be trained in these processes, in the Vedic knowledge, in the process of deity worship and these activities. Spiritual activities. When one is trained and one knows and one is expert and one practices, then one's called Vipra. You understand? It means the Dvija has the potential, but doesn't have the proper qualification. The Vipra means he has that qualification. In other words, one is untrained and one is trained. It's just, okay, let us put it like this. A little bit more. Let us say we get admitted into a college. So now we have the right to study in that college, but we can't say, yes, I am very knowledgeable. Only after 4 years when you get your degree, then you can say, now I know something. So that's the difference. When you're admitted into the college, that's called Dvija. And when you graduate, that's called Vipra. Does that make sense?
Prabhupada, he was when he established this movement, so he was stressing that even the nearby devotees, the devotees who doesn't have education, they not get all this education how to worship for deities. They may not study shastra enough or this, and then they engage in activities like preaching and fundraising or something, collecting money. And at one point, these activities, how to speak. My question is that, what is actually better first to come at the platform of Vipra, means when you have the knowledge like this, or otherwise, and then start to preach, or just by preaching we can also achieve the same goal.
Question is it better to become Vipra first, knowledgeable in the scriptures before we preach, or do we preach first? Because we see Prabhupada would immediately engage devotees in preaching activities. So the principle is we have to understand all three of these paths are running at one time. The Bhagavat, the Pancharatrik, and then assisting the Pancharatrik is assisting the Bhagavat. And the Vedic is assisting the Pancharatrik. So the point is within the realm of all the scriptures and the deity worship, we may be studying that. But that doesn't mean that we cannot also cultivate our chanting of Hare Krishna and preaching. At the same time, we're also cultivating how to follow the rules and regulations of human life. Is that understood? So it all goes on at once.
Like that means because I'm found that sometimes even between Indian devotees, at least in the example when I'm saying there is a conception when I distribute books, then there is a conception that actually this guy is just he's just making money, and that's nothing to do with spiritual life because he's just attached to do something to to somehow, you know, because too much Rajaguna and like this. So he's, you know, that doesn't mean that it's affect my posting over time. Also have this interest, so should I, you know, maybe stop for, you know, this much, you know, maybe should I, you know, how to speak, less preach and more start to educate myself on what, how to maintain this balance, because I really get all the time for book distribution and I may not have so much time to study all these things. What is the proper situation?
So the question is on there's sometimes a concept that distributing books and doing these things is just raising money and it's not really spiritual. So spiritual means you just sit down with your nose in a book. So one has to be educated in this. This means that those who hold that opinion, then they themselves are not educated. Because as we discussed before, Krishna says in the Gita, that which is in relationship to me, that is sat, or transcendental. And that which is not in relationship to me, that is material. Also in the Bhagavatam, in the Chaturshloki. He says, anything in relationship to me, that is worthwhile. Anything that's not, is not worthwhile. So even the most pious, nice material activity has no use if it's not connected to Krishna. So whatever activity, if it's connected to Krishna, that is good. And Krishna even goes so far, even if it's in the mode of passion or ignorance, at least it's connected to Him. And you'll be purified till you'll come up to a more pure platform. So the point is if we can't see book distribution of transcendental literature as a transcendental activity, then that means we ourselves should become educated to understand what is transcendental. Because otherwise, why is poking the nose in a book spiritual? I mean, universities all over the world, people do that. Does that mean all the people in Harvard University are all spiritualists? You know, because they have nose in book. So that means it's spiritual? No, unless your purpose of studying the scriptures also is for the purpose of understanding Krishna. The reading of even Vedic literature is considered avidya. See, there's three categories of knowledge. Paravidya, which means transcendental knowledge, which means like the Bhagavatam, Gita, Nectar Devotion, that's purely dealing with spiritual. Right? Vedanta Sutra. Then you have what's called aparavidya, which means material knowledge, which is dovetailed in the service of the Lord. Means you see the connection. That includes the four Vedas, all the branches of Sanskrit, astronomy, astrology, mathematics, all of your ritual that we perform, like how to do an artik or anything like this. Then all your histories, all the Vedic rules and regulations of the Vedic culture, and the processes of logic. Right? And then in your histories you get medicine, then your, you know, how you say, country manage, it means how to manage the country, how to, the arts, you know, music, drama, and dance. These are all connected in there. And also architecture. So all that is considered aparavidya, material knowledge that's engaged in Krishna's service. So as long as you see it in relationship to Krishna, use it in that way, it's called aparavidya, and you become uplifted by it. But if you don't see it in relationship to Krishna, that same knowledge will take you away from Krishna. Right? Therefore, why is it that we've seen in the past so many Sanskrit pundits take up very enthusiastically studying Sanskrit and then go away from Krishna consciousness? Because they didn't see it in relationship to Krishna. So it took them away. Devotees get into astrology, astronomy, it takes them away. They get into business, it takes them away. They get into all the rules and regulation, it takes them away. Right? Get into Vedas, get into anything. Medicine, music, because it's all material. But it is material knowledge given by Krishna. And if you study it for the purpose of understanding Krishna, then you become elevated. But if you don't, you'll go down. Guaranteed. So therefore, that is called avidya. Avidya, the definition, it means any knowledge that is not in connection with Krishna. So if they sit down and study their books, they can study for the next lifetime of Brahma and still not get back to Godhead. They'll become big, big pundit. Nice. But that's not the goal of our society. Our goal of our society is to go back to Godhead. So this is very important to understand. But Prabhupada did expect us to spend time studying the Paravidya. Right? If we're going to distribute the books, we should know what's in the books. So he laid great emphasis on that. But we have to know what is knowledge. This is the point. This is why it becomes very hazy. The whole process of Daiva Varnashram, devotional service, it seems like two things are going on at once, or they're contradictory, right? Arjuna, throughout the whole Gita, he's saying, Krishna, it appears whatever you say is contradictory. You're telling me I quoted Varnashram, protecting the women and all this, and you threw it out. And then, you know, and said you must, you know, have knowledge, and you must work on the higher principles. And then I thought, great, fine, I'll go to the forest, and you said no. And then I said, okay, what should I do? And he says, go out and fight. And he says, I don't understand, Krishna. I quoted Varnashram. Then I said, I'll give that up, go to the forest. Then you said no. And I said, what to do? And you say Varnashram. So this seems to be contradictory. And this question comes up throughout the whole Gita. Basically, he's only asking that one question. A little different angle this way or that way. But his whole dilemma is, how is it that simultaneously I'm engaging in seemingly material activities, but they're spiritual? That is Daiva Varnashram. That we're doing an activity that seems to be material, but we're doing it for Krishna. That is Daiva Varnashram. We can't get caught up in the externals. As soon as we get caught up in the externals, we're caught up. Material nature will grab us. Right? Right? The grihastha has to be millionaires and the sannyasi has to be, you know, a beggar with nothing. Then we're caught up. Because we think that makes the grihastha and that makes the sannyas. No. Grihastha is one who's the center of his house is Krishna. And he engages his family in that. And sannyas means one who doesn't perform any activity for his own benefit. Right? And that's just on the material platform. Now we throw it into the Daiva Varnashram, then both of them are sannyasis because both of them are doing their activity. Renunciation is also material. Right? We get so caught up that every brahmacharya must be so renounced, but renunciation is also material. What is ours to renounce? The man walks into the bank and says, I renounce all this. Then? What will the bank manager will think? Wow, very nice, thank you. Now we get the money. No? He'll just say, what do you mean? It's not yours to get. You know, they'll call the guards and say, throw this man out. So renunciation is also attachment. See, just like there are people who can't live without material facility, there's people who can't live with it. It's still a conditioned nature. My conditioned nature is soft. I can't stand or tolerate keeping so much junk. Therefore, I get rid of it and I keep nothing. And I am happy. And then there's another person, they have nothing, they can't survive. They must have some facility. They must have a regular place they stay. They must have, you know, a certain amount of clothing and other things like that. Otherwise, they can't survive. Both of them are material. One is okay. One is more detached. It's more the mode of goodness. One has more passion. So therefore, between the two materialists, the one with more passion respects the one with more goodness. So therefore, the grihastha respects the sannyasi. But when it comes to the transcendental, then the point is the realization that all these activities are meant for Krishna. So whether it's my house or whether it's not, grihe tako, bane tako, sadahari, bole dako. Doesn't matter where you are. You chant the holy name and you go back to Godhead. So both of them are on the transcendental platform. Because they're not managing their house or making their money for their own purposes. Right? This we'll discuss tomorrow. Means, how? What is the conditioned nature? How do we look at it? How do we deal with it? Then we understand how to apply the varnashram. Yes, sir?
I seem to have to believe in terms of the generations after generations in highly cultured society. They would follow strict rules and regulations, not knowing why. Like, zombies, basically. I mean, you know, someone is bound to ask somewhere, why is it that we follow so many rules and regulations? Mm. But then you say, well, you know, they just follow it. They don't know why. It seems hard to believe the generation after generation.
No, generally you won't find that. It means the point of generation after generation following without asking why. It means that's always going on. But in general, you see nowadays people follow, they don't know why. But they're still following. They're pious enough to know that it's been given by God, better to follow it, if we don't know why. But if you go back in history, you'll see people knew why. There's people nowadays who know why. Depends on the family. But overall, we see that the Vedic system has become polluted because of not knowing why. But, so that can be discussed more later, because now it's the end. We'll finish here, and then we'll continue tomorrow. So then tomorrow we'll discuss understanding the condition, what is the condition nature, how it applies, and then how that relates to the different varnas and ashrams, so we know how to properly establish ourselves. Okay. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.